Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Forever in.
not thinking about how people fall in love in mysterious ways. And maybe it's all part of a plan. Well, I'll just keep on making the same mistakes, hoping that you'll understand that they.
It's Friday, June the 3rd, 2016, and this is The Last Word. And I'm Michael Lawson, and joining us very shortly will be my senior producer, Mr. Thomas Fortenberry. And with me right here is, what's your name?
Blake.
Blake what?
Lawson Moore.
And who are you?
His grandson.
His grandson? When he's speaking in a the third person 16 times removed or what?
No.
Oh, okay. So, what did you do today? What did you get today at school? I see your name is on this piece of paper. It says the National Physical Fitness Award.
Well, it's an award for my coach, and he gives it to me. He gives it to everybody that is good and has muscles.
You're supposed to speak to the mic.
And that has muscles.
That has muscles.
And that's strong.
You can only get this if you have muscles?
Or you can be strong.
You can be strong?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't give it to you. Who gave it to you? Who signed it?
Barack Obama. Barack Obama.
Who's he?
The President of the United States.
And it says to Blake Moore, 6/3/2016.
Yes.
And this was for commitment to an achievement in physical fitness for improved health and performance. What did you have to do?
I had to do push-ups and sit-ups and run 1 mile.
And how old are you?
7.
And you collapsed after 10 feet?
Yes.
You collapsed on the ground?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Good. And Nayla beat you running?
No.
She didn't?
No.
Well, you collapsed. Nayla could run far further than 10 feet.
She fell.
She fell?
Mm-hmm.
No, she didn't. So? So you're the only one who got this? Or anybody else get anything? You got it for how many categories?
5.
And who else got? Did anybody else get one?
Yes. Yes.
Talking to the microphone. Yeah. And who else got it?
My friend Isabella.
Isabella, the girl, huh?
Mhm.
Mhm. And who else?
My friend Sarah.
Sarah. Who else?
Jojo. Abraham. And that's it.
So they all got, they all did it in five categories?
Mm-hmm.
Or you were the only one in five categories, or you
mm-hmm.
said you were the only one in five categories?
Mm-mm.
Who else?
My friends.
Oh, all them?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you all got physical fitness awards, and that's very good then, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. You had to do pull-ups, too, on the bar? How many did you do?
Our coach told us to keep on doing it until we got tired, and I did it, and I beat everybody.
For how long?
For as long as you can, and I did mine, and we had to stay on there and push ourselves over a bar.
Mm-hmm. For how long?
Until we fall down.
And how long was that? You said it was a minute or something?
A minute. In 25 seconds.
Oh, okay. All right, and what do you got planned on for the rest of the day? What do you got to do later?
I have a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. What kind of baseball game?
It's a regular baseball game.
No, it's not a regular baseball game. It's a playoff game, your first playoff game.
It's a playoff game.
And if you win, then you go what? You got one more, then you go to a championship game, right?
Uh-huh, and it's a doubleheader.
Well, tomorrow, maybe. Okay, but you got to win.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You can beat it now. Okay.
Okay.
About your business. Okay, that was Blake telling us nothing we already didn't know, or did we know this already? No?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good. All right, goodbye.
No.
No? Yes? No?
No.
Okay. Anyway. Hey. It's 12 minutes after 3. Has anybody heard Donald Trump yet today? I mean, Paul Ryan must be kicking himself in the butt. Oh, by the way, I want to say, the young lady you heard, which I just love her singing that song. That was Iyana. And she sang that song at her stepfather's repast. It was wonderful. She sounds and she looks just as great as she sounds. But I just wanted to say that again. Thank you, Iyana. We're going to play that again until I get sick of it. Because I love the song. Anyway. And I love Iyana singing that song. Anyway, let's see. They are all upset. Donald Trump, McConnell has said today, he ought to be trying to unify this party instead of trying to criticize this party. Paul Ryan didn't endorse him, but he said that he would vote for him. Now, that's not the same thing. The only reason why he said that is because he's either going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and if he says he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton, which I think he's going to do anyway, even though he said he's going to vote for Trump, I don't think he's going to vote for Trump. So, that remains to be seen because we'll never know. And remember, this really, really fits. There's something that Grimm said. And I put this down as one of our sayings. Normally we have a saying every week that I just love to quote. And the saying is that it's a good friend doesn't let you do stupid things alone. How about that? I guess none of these people are good friends of Donald Trump. I guess he's got no good friends because everybody's letting him go out there and bury his head deeper and deeper in S-H-I-T. Yes, they are doing that. They are doing that. They don't care what Trump says. They just don't want to be part of it when he does. And the other saying is, dead stood behind. Death stood behind him and said, follow me. The hour of your departure from this world has come. Yep. That's it. And that, with that lead in, Mr. Thomas Fortenberry. How are you, sir?
How are you, sir?
Does this absolutely go firsthand with Donald Trump? A good friend doesn't let you do stupid things alone. I mean to tell you. How's McConnell and Paul Ryan feel the day after they were saying such good things about Donald Trump?
Oh, my gosh. You know, when even the evil emperor has nothing nice to say about you, you gotta wonder. Now, McConnell is just the epitome of a nice guy. So,
Oh yeah.
There's that. I mean, Paul Ryan, no offense. I couldn't care less what Paul Ryan said about anybody. I just, it's Paul Ryan. But McConnell, at least, give the evil emperor his due, man. That man, he gives me the willies every time I see him. So slimy.
Oh, God.
Like a reptilian, you know.
He reminds me of, you talk about the evil emperor, the empire. The evil empire strikes back.
He's like the evil emperor. He's
right.
Like Palpatine or whatever. Keep waiting for him to raise his hand and having lightning come out of it.
I'm telling you. Listen, I mean,
come to the dark side, Anakin.
We're trying to count the people. I mean, is there anybody that Donald Trump hasn't insulted? I mean, his last insult at the daggone Rolling Thunder. I mean, he just, you mean this is all you could have? Only 5,000 people? I was expecting Martin Luther King, 200,000 people here.
Yeah.
He don't have 200,000 people, friends. You remember what it says here? That's what I was saying. A good friend.
Mike, the reason that all the people couldn't show up, all of his real supporters, is because since they hate immigrants so much, there was no way for them to get all of their white sheets washed before the event. See, there's just not that many cleaners that are, we'll say Aryan. There's weren't enough cleaners in the area, and so they couldn't get the laundry done. See, they couldn't have a good rally, you know?
They had to stay home and cut their grass because all the immigrants went on strike.
Well, yes, there was also the whole, they lost out on the entire Oklahoma contingent because, there was a tornado in the trailer park and they couldn't make it that year. But normally there would have been more. There's only so much hatred, Michael. There's only so much hatred. They're trying.
Listen to the who's who on the insult list. Mitt Romney, Susan Martinez, Thomas Lemos, Jim Acosta, the vets, his own supporters, Rolling Thunder. I mean, the only people he hasn't insulted was his son. Oh, the federal judiciary.
Yeah. And don't forget the Pope.
I forgot the Pope.
This is the most beloved man on earth, and yet somehow Trump found it in his heart to hate even him, you know. So.
Now, did you know that, and I didn't have a chance to put it up, but none of these, of this monies that was supposedly gotten to his foundation, none of these checks were written until this week. This week.
Oh, right, until the investigation went into print, when all the reporters had looked into everything and they couldn't find any donations to veteran groups anywhere that he kept claiming he had been making. And then he hurried up and wrote a whole bunch of checks at midnight, you know, after the news story broke, and then said, "What y'all talking about?"
Well, as Paul Rykoff said, who's the head of the Veterans for America, which is one of the largest, if not the largest group, veterans group in the country, said that his group was offended. His group was offered a donation by the Trump last week, but turned it down because it wanted to keep its distance from an opportunistic showman. He said, and besides that, we're nonpartisan. We don't take donations from political candidates. So what that means is that all these other groups are partisan.
Are going to be forced. Well, no, they'll be forced to not take any money, because then they'll be like, oh, yeah, well, we aren't going to do that either.
Well, yeah, let's look. Let's see if that happens, because if they take money, that means they're not partisan. Therefore, they can't have a 501c3.
Right. If they're taking money, then they're a partisan political group.
That's right. That's right. And that means they can't get a tax donation.
Right.
And if that's the case, the IRS is looking at them with licking their chops.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, who would want to be in bed with this guy anyway? I mean, even if you accepted money from people, why would you want to accept his, you know? That'd be like, Trump, only Trump is, who would want to be endorsed by Putin and Kim Jong-il Jr.? So, you got to think. What self-respecting group would ever want to be associated with this guy?
I'm telling you, every teapot, two-bit dictator in the entire world is endorsing him. Because
look at his endorsements, they're the KKK, you know, North Korea, and Russia. I mean, it's ludicrous, and it would be a death sentence for any normal politician.
Revels in North Korea. You hear what he said about the Kim Jong-un? He says, boy, he said, is this guy good or what? 26 years old, and he had those generals all marching in lockstep. He likes to use that word lockstep because it reminds him of the Nazis.
Well, you know, at least Trump's got goals. You know, give him that.
He's got some goals. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. He has goals.
He sees this young man and says, why, I wish I had some soldiers marching in lockstep. That's something I can attain. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, you see some things you like here and there, and you put it all together, and you might have something. You never know.
Well, what he said about China, he says, boy, he says, they really made those protesters pay in Tiananmen Square. Right?
Wow.
I mean, what are you going to say? They really made those protesters pay. When they say goes. And remind us what he
really
said
about
the generals. Hey, when I tell the generals to do something, they're going to do it.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking about, driving tanks over students and then burning the bodies,
Well, he said he's going to go after the
special.
Families. He said it wasn't enough just to go get Osama bin Laden. Why do we get all the families that are associated with him? Not being in the military is not an excuse for not knowing that you're not supposed to do that or not knowing what the rules of war. And there are rules of war, even though some...
Well, there's also just basic human compassion. You know, you don't go after, women and children and, you don't burn down your neighbor's home just because you don't like your neighbor, type thing.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, come on.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You go after your neighbor. You go after your neighbor. Why not? And I wanted to...
Well, hey, Hey, Mike, I just wanted to get everybody together on the same page. We could all work together. You see, we could pool our resources and stuff. And if y'all have a hey, do you want to see a pencil trick? you know, there's that kind of guy, you know, that Trump's building alliances all over the place. You know, North Korea, Putin, well, you know, woo, can't wait to see what he does next.
Speaking about what war is all about, you know, Sunday is June the 6th. In case we got to remind Donald Trump what June the 6th was. Okay, this is a little bit of information for him.
The Normandy landings, codenamed Operation Neptune, were the landing operations on the 6th of June, 1944. It was the Allied invasion of Normandy, Operation Overlord, during World War II. It was the largest seaborne invasion in history and began the invasion of German-occupied Western Europe, which led to the restoration of the French Republic and contributed to an Allied victory in the war. Planning for the operation began in 1943, but in the months leading up to the invasions, the Allies conducted a substantial military deception, codenamed Operation Bodyguard, to mislead the Germans as to the date and the location of the main Allied landings. Using captured German codes and double agents, they sent messages to German intelligence indicating that the invasion army was much larger than it actually was, and that the main attack would come at Calais in northern France. They also played up the possibility of other attacks from Norway, Italy, the south of France, Greece, and the Balkans. Because the Germans were not sure where the invasion would come, they had to keep all their garrisons manned and could not concentrate their resources on any one spot. They guessed wrong. The Germans concentrated on Calais because of the great ports and landing areas. The ruse went far beyond simple misinformation, however. The Allies created a bogus army, the 1st United States Army Group, codenamed Operation Quicksilver, that went to enormous lengths to make the Germans believe that they were actually full of thousands of men. Indeed, that army was initially filled with men assigned to real armies preparing for Operation Overlord. Meanwhile, British intelligence created inflatable tanks and plywood battleships to accompany the tent city and base where the army was supposedly housed. Care was taken to move the vehicles at night and add tire tracks when possible to simulate activities. To make sure that the Germans were completely deceived, they placed a real general at the head of this fictitious army, the 1st United States Army Group. His name was General George S. Patton, a man renowned for his toughness. The Germans regarded Patton highly and were convinced that he would lead the assault on Europe. Since his forces appeared ready to attack Calais, the Germans dare not move or transfer any soldiers from Calais to Normandy, where the attack actually happened. Patton played his role well. D-Day, June the 6th, 1944, the amphibious landings were preceded by extensive aerial and naval bombardment, along with an airborne assault of 24,000 British, U.S., and Canadian airborne troops shortly after midnight. Allied infantry and armored divisions began landing on the coast of France starting at 06:30 hours. The target was a 50-mile stretch of Normandy coast, where they divided it into five sectors: Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juneau, and Sword Beach. However, bad weather and strong winds played havoc with the landings, especially at Utah and Omaha Beach, blowing the landing craft east of their intended positions, which cost many Allied lives. The Normandy landings were the largest seaborne invasion in history, with nearly 5,000 landings and assault craft, 289 escort vehicles, and 277 minesweepers participating. Nearly 160,000 troops crossed the English Channel on D-Day, with 875,000 men disembarking by the end of June. Some experts say that the death of soldiers and civilians from fighting, disease, and starvation in World War II could have reached as high as 100 million.
And this has been a Michael Lawson production.
It was, yes, it was.
Well, that was rather fantastic.
It was the Last Word production. And but that's just a little taste of what it was. Let's see what Donald Trump says about that this weekend, if he even remembers. It is so bad that I don't see why he can't remember, since he loves the Nazis and loves the Russians and loves the Chinese and the North Koreans' management of their people, administration of their people. Why wouldn't he know what the Nazis did in World War II?
Yeah. Enough about all those other people, Mike. This is about Donald Trump. It's supposed to be about him every day.
Trump. You mean Donald Drump?
Drump.
That's right. Donald the Drump. So, now, this is still, to this day, the biggest naval landing in history. June the 6th.
Yeah, that truly, truly was one of the...
Of the 6 month. 666. Remember that. 666. Six hours, 6 months, and 6 days. So this is really a time to remember and reflect back what it took, where his Donald Trump's father ran out and ran back to Germany so he didn't have to serve in World War II here. And when it got bad over there, he ran back to the United States because they said, well, if you're not going to fight, the Germans said, for us, then you got to pay for help pay for some of this war. And since he didn't want to help pay for any of the war, oh, I'm sorry, that was his grandfather, right? So he ran back to the United States. So, you know, because he had to leave the country, the United States, in the first place because of his bordellos and the other shenanigans he was doing back then. You know,
this is a recurrent theme, Mike, with all these draft dodging,
isn't it?
Never want to serve, do anything to enrich themselves, Republicans. Because if you remember the last presidential nominee, you know, here we got Trump, who's even less qualified. But the last one, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, you know, everybody say, oh, he's a governor, he's a good guy, he's, you know. Well, people forget, you know, his family fled to Mexico to avoid the law of the United States because they had they were a Mormon family, had multiple wives and didn't want to participate in that. And then also wanted to not pay, you know, taxes to the government. So they went to Mexico, his grandfather did, and his father and all that were actually born Mexican and all that. But then seeing how impoverished and everything Mexico was after being down there for, you know, a generation, they decided to come back to America to make a fortune. And so that is why Mitt Romney actually got back to the United States, you know, and fought his fortunes here. But again, you've got families that not only don't want to participate in the military or do their duty or even pay their taxes, they will actively leave the country, flee to escape, to go somewhere else and try to, you know, sit in their squalor and rake in some money. I just don't understand, though, why these Republicans that are the bumper sticker Republicans with, you know, flags on every car and a black W band on every arm that they have.
Oh, yes.
What are these guys thinking, though, when they look at their candidates? They're like the most un-American people, literally un-American people you could ever imagine. People who actively work against our government and would rather leave the country. And in the case of Trump's family, literally went to Germany to escape. And you just kind of, you're like, are you kidding me? I mean, it's like something you wouldn't even write about, you know, your worst enemy, because it'd sound too, I'm making him too nasty, you know. But think about that. These are people who hate America and their duty to the country as a citizen enough to leave, give up their citizenship just to escape paying taxes or going to war or whatever. It's kind of it really speaks to their character.
But wait a minute. Listen, as Trump said on Tuesday, he told the journalists, he says, the Trump got very upset with him when he persisted. He said, I know you, you're from ABC. He said, you're a sleaze. You're a sleaze. He said, and Jim Costello, he said, you're a beauty. I mean, you know, Jim Acosta. This is what he says to people. This is his only out. He doesn't, they say, oh, he's such a great debater. He doesn't debate. If you don't, can you imagine this man coming to the
rotunda
in the Congress during the first session after you become president in January, and he starts calling out the Democrats in the seats? Oh, you're a sleaze. You're a dirtbag. You're this. He said, yeah. And the Republicans are laughing. Yeah, you too. He said, look, I run this. You know, you have. Is he insane? They'll laugh at him. They will laugh at him. And he can stop and see all he wants.
My mother used to say, the man has no coos.
Yes.
But
yeah,
I mean,
point.
He has, yeah, I mean, there's nothing to recommend. I mean, he doesn't know how to behave. He acts like an imbecile. He acts like a completely spoiled child, which apparently he is. But he just always gets his way. And anybody who dares say no to him for any reason, whether it's a reporter or, you know, somebody serving him in restaurant food, he instantly starts calling names. And that's what children and bullies do that don't know how to act.
Well, he's been a bully his whole life. Well, you remember what happened in January of this year for the Fox debate. Just listen to
this. Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
She gets out and she starts asking me all sorts of ridiculous questions. And, you know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Learn from a secret back channel that the Ayatollah and Putin both intend to treat Donald Trump unfairly when they meet him if he becomes president. A nefarious source tells us that Trump has his own secret plan to replace the cabinet with his Twitter followers to see if he should even go to those meetings. For Trump, that just about did it.
I don't know what games Roger Ailes is playing, but what's wrong over there? Something's wrong. With me, they're dealing with somebody that's a little bit different. They can't toy with me like they toy with everybody else. When they sent out the wise guy press releases a little while ago, done by some PR person along with Roger Ailes, I said, bye-bye.
He later tweeted it was the childishly written and taunting PR statement that made him back out, more so than the, quote, lightweight reporter, Megyn Kelly. You should note that Donald Trump hasn't always held the same opinion about skipping debates or about Megyn Kelly's moderating skills. Here he is in 2011, an interview with Kelly, discussing some of the 2012 presidential candidates who declined to attend, and this really takes us back, a debate, a Newsmax debate that Trump was co-hosting.
We're not seeing a lot of courage here, are we?
Not so far.
Not lots of courage.
Are
these
still
Republicans.
Do it?
They're supposed to be brave.
Do you really think that you're a better moderator than I am?
No, I could never beat you. That wouldn't even be close. There would be no contest. You have done a great job, by the way, and I mean it. I told them, I said, give money to the wounded warriors, give money to the veterans. They're going to make a fortune with the debate. Now let's see how many people watch. We'll have our own event. We'll raise some money for the wounded warriors. We'll raise money for the vets.
Fox News has been pulling a similar trick, insisting on their own steadfast righteousness in the face of Trump's cajoling. A spokesperson said in a statement last night, capitulating to politicians' ultimatums about a debate moderator violates all journalistic standards. Trump is still welcome at Thursday night's debate and will be treated fairly, but he can't dictate the moderators of the questions. A high-minded principle, no doubt, but it didn't stop Fox from joining the pile-on after the CNBC debate in October, where the moderators were raked over the coals by the candidates and the conservative media who didn't like their questions. It certainly didn't stop Fox from using the backlash to debate their own debate on to promote their own debate on Fox Business a couple weeks later.
CNBC never asked the real questions, never covered the real issues. That's why on November 10th, the real debate about our economy and our future is only on Fox Business Network.
Now, after everyone threw a fit about CNBC, the RNC felt compelled to disinvite NBC News, a separate entity, from co-hosting a later debate. Now the Trump camp is calling on them to repeat the precedent. A top advisor tweeted, RNC pulls out of NBC debate over the conduct of CNBC moderators during the third GOP debate in Colorado. Megyn Kelly's conduct, far worse. I'm joined now by Gabe Sherman, who's a national affairs editor for New York Magazine, quite literally wrote the book on Roger Ailes, The Loudest Voice.
Now, here's the thing. There wouldn't be a Trump if it wasn't for the media. There would be a Trump. There would not be a Trump. And yet, they say, I'm shocked to know that there's gambling going on here. I mean, what are these people kidding me? And MSNBC is the same. But you see, the problem is if they don't get together and say, we're not going to receive his phone calls, we're not going to show his nonsense, then they look bad, they're biased. Everybody has to do it. But everybody are whores. They're all whores. They all want somebody they cuss because it sells.
Well,
it
this is
sells.
Why he's a perfect match. He is nothing but a brand name. He's like the Kardashians of politics.
Absolutely.
He just endlessly sells Trump. The whole that is the entirety of it. There is no policy. There's no stance. And that's why people are saying, well, how does he feel about nuclear proliferation in the age of No, there isn't anything but the debate. It's just Trumpism. It's Trump. So, but he's a barker like in a carnival. He's just the huckster
he's
up front, the showman, the fast talker. Yeah, that's why he does things like. Who wants to be a millionaire or who wants to succeed in business or, who wants to be Miss America or whatever his shows are. So all he does, though, is sell himself. And just like, the Kardashians I mentioned a minute ago, they exist in their own universe where they talk about themselves. They have shows about themselves. And then the media, which is in the business of selling, advertising, they talk about the show in a way that makes it legitimate because if it's being talked about, it's legitimized. So when you say the Kardashians are important because we're talking about the Kardashians, that's a circle. And that's what Trump exists in. It's Trump is important because we're talking about Trump because we can't believe what Trump said. Did you hear what he said? That's why he's important because that's what he said and people are talking about what he said. And it's the cycle of BS.
You're right. Did you hear what he said? They know what he said, and there it's ludicrous to say, did you hear? I can't believe he said that. Well, that's why you're showing it, because you hope he said something stupid.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's so.
It's like when you run out onto the man on the street episode, and you run out there and you find the one homeless guy with wild hair and he's walking around holding a balloon animal and then you run up to him and say, how do you feel about the you're going to get a juicy comment.
You're talking about Bernie Sanders? I mean, listen, here we go. Bernie Sanders is the same thing. Bernie Sanders cannot win the delegate. What he says, what he lies, like Donald Trump is, what he lies and says, we can still win the delegates. No one will have enough delegates to the convention. That's an outright lie. She'll need 71 more delegates. Not forget the daggone super delegates. She'll need 71 more pledged delegates. That's all she needs. And here's the thing. There are no winner-take-alls in any other elections left. I think, well, one, Oregon, maybe.
Right.
Well, what, do you got five delegates in Oregon? She only needs 71 more. She will have the requisite numbers after Jersey. She will, and that's Jersey is before California. This is a complete,
right,
utter joke. And he says, she won't have it. She won't. That's baloney. And here's the problem. The Bernie Sanders people are just as dumb as the Trump people because they believe it because they don't know. This man is,
well,
Bernie Sanders, sick of Bernie Sanders now. I am sick of him because he's lying. He's lying. He's just lying. Nothing he said is a fact. He's hoping we like to see that, what he's saying, but it's not a fact. He says it as a fact. And that doesn't, that only gets you people who don't know anything. Like half these daggone people that were born 25 years ago and 18 years ago, who don't know a damn thing about the Constitution, who were not taught it in college, who weren't taught it in high school, do not know civics, don't even know what precinct they're in, 90% of them, and then the other 10%, or one-third probably, are Republicans. That's why they could not vote in California. The judge turned them down. He wanted to make it an open election. Well, you need to do that a year in advance.
Right.
This is so ludicrous. The judge said, hell no. This is a joke. You tell me this man been in business, been in the politics for 40 years, and he doesn't know that you can't run in a closed primary as anything else but a Republican or a Democrat? He doesn't know that? Well, this is someone we definitely don't need to be as president. He's been there 40 years. It ain't like Donald Trump's been a politician for 40 years. He hasn't, but Bernie Sanders has. So Donald Trump at least has an excuse. Trump, I should say, has an excuse. But Sanders has no excuse. Sanders has no excuse that I am ignorant of the law of why we can't get all the people to run. I'm sorry. I was for Bernie. Yes, I want it to be nice to have free tuition, be nice to have health care and everything. But if he couldn't get health care when he had control of the House and the Senate, they're not gonna get it now. And how can you not see that? And all these people that say, oh, we gotta push, they're full of shit. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. That's the end of it. They are full of it. They're lying. And these people I respect, and they're lying. They're just lying. And you say, well, we got to push to make sure the agenda. Well, good. Well, push for the damn agenda. But don't tell people we're going to win the election. Oh, if there's a large turnout, we will win California. Well, it don't make a difference if you win California because you're not going to get the prerequisites. Because as soon as Jersey is over with, which votes before them, you will lose because all she needs is the 2376 or 2375. She's 71 short. That's all she's short. She will get that in Jersey because it don't matter if he wins most of the votes in Jersey. It doesn't matter if he wins most of the votes in California. It doesn't care if he wins most of the votes every place else. She only needs 71. He's 300 plus behind. There isn't enough out there. He had to win every single district in California. And then she had to win it by more than 80%. Not just win it by 80% each district. It can't happen.
Yeah, but Mike, has Outer Wichita voted yet?
No, they haven't. But I'm
See,
sure those three are
hope,
not going to help.
Mike,
them.
There's hope.
Yeah,
there's
hope. All right, right.
I think he could maybe pull in the west side of Birmingham. Still, he might could do it.
Well, that's true. Well, you know what? I guess Texas is out now because it's flooded, huh?
Oh yeah, poor Texas. What's that word? What's it called? Federal assistance? Is that the right
Ooh.
Term?
No, they don't use federal
I think that's what they asked for. Disaster relief? What's that horrible? What's that Nazi agency that Obama started with all the terrorists
FEMA?
From outer space?
FEMA?
FEMA, yeah, FEMA. I bet they'll ask for FEMA to come in and help.
Yes, that stands for right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always embarrassing when that happens every single year after they constantly run on these platforms of we hate Washington, we're going to secede from the union, we're never going to pay taxes on anything, and we're going to shut down those evil jackboot agencies that Obama runs. Oh, hey, you got a check for us?
The Federal Imperial Military Agency. That's what it stands for.
Yes, exactly. Obviously a branch of the Kenyan Special Forces.
Yes. That's right. Who's the one? What's the name? Why can't I ever think of his name? What's the Starship Troopers? That's his.
Robert A. Heinlein.
Yeah. Right. That's his group.
Exactly.
These people are so
it's just so embarrassing. You know, every time there's a tornado, an earthquake, flood, you know, wildfire, anything else, they pick up that phone and Obama's on the other end of it going, no problem, I got your back, because you know what? I'm a fair guy and I'm the president. Yeah, here comes federal aid to the rescue.
But meanwhile,
back in Trump land, they're going, we don't need no federal aid. We stand on our own. We're independent here.
Well, you hear what Hillary did. She ripped him a new buttonhole.
Well, it's about time. I like what she did the other day.
This is some of the things that Hillary said.
I believe the person the Republicans have nominated for president cannot do the job. He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
Watched Hillary today. It was pathetic. It was so sad to watch. And, you know, she's up there and supposed to be a foreign policy speech. It was a political speech. Had nothing to do with foreign policy. She made a political speech tonight, folks, and it was a pretty pathetic deal.
Imagine him deciding whether to send your spouses or children into battle. Imagine if he had not just his Twitter account at his disposal when he's angry, but America's entire arsenal. Do we want him making those calls? Someone thin-skinned and quick to anger who lashes out at the smallest criticism. Do we want his finger anywhere near the button? Donald Trump, our commander-in-chief, would be a historic mistake, and it would undo so much of the work that Republicans and Democrats alike have done over many decades to make America stronger and more secure. He praises dictators like Vladimir Putin and picks fights with our friends.
Putin said Trump is a genius. I like that. Not going to get him anything, but I was still. You know what these characters on the stage? We want you to disavow. They wanted me to call Putin or write to Putin and say, please never call me a genius again. There's no way that's ever going to happen.
I think in terms of leadership, he's getting an A and our president is not doing so well.
If you look at North Korea,
This guy, he's like a maniac, okay? And you got to give him credit. How many young guys, he was like 26 or 25 when his father died, take over these tough generals, and all of a sudden, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think of it. He goes in, he takes over, he's the boss. It's incredible.
Madeleine Albright, she's the former Secretary of State who served President Bill Clinton. She is a supporter of Hillary Clinton for president. Secretary Albright, your reaction to some of what we just heard Donald Trump saying, that, for example, Vladimir Putin gets an A for leadership.
Well, Lawrence, it's great to be on the show, and I find the fact that Trump admires people like Vladimir Putin, who's a KGB officer and is allowing no freedom in his country, and Kim Jong-un, who has executed people that he disagrees with, is quite stunning and very troubling in terms of somebody who's running for president of the United States. People listen to what he says. And I am very troubled by it. I travel abroad all the time, Lawrence, and people cannot understand what is going on when somebody who's running for president can be so completely irresponsible in what he says. And I do think, I was listening to what David and Andy were saying about Secretary Clinton's speech. I think she did a really fascinating job in combining the political part of this with a substantive foreign policy speech. She talked about what needed to be done at home economically. She talked about how we need to deal with our allies, how important alliances are. She talked about how clear we have to be with our adversaries, how we are going to deal with ISIS, the biggest threat that is out there in terms of the security of the United States. And she did get off a few zingers. But the bottom line is she made very clear that Donald Trump is dangerous for the United States and for the world.
Secretary Albright, did you have any input into this speech? Did you get a draft and do an Albright edit of it?
No, I didn't. I did get a draft, and I obviously am very proud of my connection to Hillary Clinton and to the campaign. But I have spent a lot of time with Hillary in a variety of different ways, you know, when she was First Lady, and then when I was secretary, and then when she was senator, and she is the best prepared person ever to run for the presidency. And I think she showed that today. And her capability of dealing with somebody or describing somebody that could be in the Situation Room, I thought was interesting when you had your conversation with Andy. I've been in the Situation Room. These are really, really hard decisions. And you cannot have somebody in there that doesn't understand the issues and then make snap decisions. And by the way, I'm a professor at Georgetown University, and I teach a course on decision making. Donald Trump would flunk my course. The bottom line is that if Donald Trump is going to do what he says he's going to do, we are going to be at war with every country in the world. And those that we're not at war with, they are going to be at war with each other. And what he did today to say he didn't say all those things about Japan and nuclear, the capability that they should have, you guys have the proof of it because it's been on TV. And so I do think it is interesting that he said that we do have better relations with Cuba and with Burma, Myanmar, and with Iran and a lot of countries because, frankly, the Obama administration had a pretty hard deck of cards that they had to pick up from the previous administration that, in fact, helped to undermine America's reputation abroad by militarizing democracy. And so I think they've done a great job, and I really do think that people need to listen to how complicated the world is, that we need somebody that actually knows where the countries are, that understands what the leadership in those countries is showing, and that has some sense about the difficulties of making decisions and who will listen to what the military and our diplomats have to say. So I don't even know how to say this, Lawrence. I'm appalled at the kinds of things that Donald Trump says. And when I'm abroad and have to tell people, no, this is not going to happen, I am then troubled by some of the things that a very good friend of mine, Fred Malik, says, because people are listening to the way we are reacting to the ridiculous, dangerous nonsense that Donald Trump is saying.
Donald Trump has mentioned in his speech tonight, he's made some passing references to Secretary Clinton's email at the State Department, as if that's all you have to know about her service at the State Department. But you were actually the first Secretary of State in the email era. No Secretary of State prior to you had any option of being near email in the office. You never used email of any kind. Then Colin Powell did after you, and then Condoleezza Rice followed your model of not using email of any kind at the State Department. Is that what you would advise secretaries to do, is just do it the old-fashioned way with the telephone and not use email at all?
Well, I do think it's important to use new technology, but I am very glad I didn't. I actually invented the art of the diplomatic conference call. We all got to know each other very well that way. I do think that the issue is certainly out there. Secretary Clinton has said she made a mistake, but nothing about the email issue is dangerous for our country. What is dangerous are the kinds of things that Donald Trump is saying, genuinely dangerous.
Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, an honor to have you here tonight. Secretary, thank you very much.
Thanks for giving me the last word, Lawrence.
thank you.
Okay, it was a it's definitely
the lady of a thousand pins and brooches. But Madeleine Albright, what a hero.
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. We have we're going to have before we leave off Albright, we have a short show today because Blake is in his first playoff game. Baseball
Woo-hoo.
Game. So we got to leave here very shortly. So we're only going to go to 4:30, but we're expecting a call from a very, 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 very interesting gentleman. And
Donald Trump?
No, more interested in Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump.
Well, you never know, you know, because he apparently likes to call into radio shows and use fake IDs, you know. He's been caught doing that.
Donald Trump would love to have a lawyer like this guy. I mean, this young man.
Unfortunately, he may need a lawyer like this guy.
Well, yes, he. Well,
he keeps getting in trouble.
He could be in a major problem because this man is going to be probably the next Supreme Court in the Supreme Court, probably in November. And
fantastic.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, just met him for the first time. His name is Judge Michael Morgan, and I saw him at our 12th District Convention. And joining us right now is the aforementioned Judge Michael Morgan. How are you,
Hello,
Judge?
Hello, can you hear me? I'm doing
yes,
great. Can
I
you hear me
fine.
Okay?
I hear you fine.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it, gentlemen. And, Michael, it was indeed a great time when I had a chance to meet you a couple of weeks ago. I'm glad to be with you and all your great listeners on this program.
Well,
welcome to the show.
I tell you what, when Stormy called me, and I did not know Stormy was a lawyer.
Yes.
I did not know it because I don't remember her ever telling me that. But she is, and North Carolina, what can they do to get you as our Supreme Court judge
Justice.
In North Carolina? What can we
yes.
do? Because there, I'm looking, this, ladies and gentlemen, Judge Morgan is currently on the Supreme Court. He was elected in Wake County, and that's out of Raleigh for everybody who doesn't know North Carolina. But he is a person who has been, is it 10 years you've been on the court system, Judge?
Yeah, I've actually been in the court system for a total of 26 years. 11 years currently on the Superior Court bench, plus
and the Superior
another 10 years prior to that. District court bench, and 5 years prior to that as a state administrative law judge. So the 11 current years plus the 16 previous years, 26 years all total as a judge in the North Carolina court system.
Oh, so
that's fantastic.
We know that. I want to ask you about you first. Then I want to ask you a couple of other questions. I know there are certain limitations that you cannot answer. So I'm not going to ask you anything about what's going on with redistricting. I'm not going to ask you about any other stuff, which is absolute nonsense. But I want people to understand who you are, that you are a North Carolinian. You were born in New Bern. You went to New Bern public school system, and you went to Trent Park Elementary School. You went to New Bern Senior High School and was the first black drum major in the marching band there.
Is that correct? All of that is true, and as for Trent Park Elementary School, I was the first black student to attend that school. I integrated that school back in the mid-60s.
In the mid-60s. And how far was that? Did you have to travel to integrate that school?
I went probably – New Bern is a fairly small town geographically,
yes.
So I had to travel about 5 miles, and, of course, there was no busing that was going to come into my neighborhood at that time.
Right.
So as a result, my father would take me to school 5 miles each way.
And how do you do that? Do they have a vehicle?
Oh, yes. Yes. My father took me to school every day. I remember vividly it was a new school opening up, and, of course, there was just the beginning of integration at that time back in my hometown of New Bern. And I remember we were doing some touring, just going around the city, and one of those Sunday afternoon drives that my parents
right.
and I would take together, and they were in the school system too. So we drove up, and I said, "Wow, what a great looking school!" And I remember my father said, "Son, do you want to go to this school?" And I said, "Sure," because it was sparkling, brand new. Of course, little did I know. What I was raising at the time, but I'm so glad that I did it, and it has gone a long way towards forming who I am today in terms of understanding the need for all of us to get along together and to have diversity in our state and in our country.
Well, how was the racism back then? You see, now I'm talking from a standpoint, I'm of New York City, although I was born in Topeka, Kansas, by accident because my father was stationed out there at the time. But I was, for a year old on, I was born and raised, not born, but raised in New York City. So I know nothing about the South until I came down here about 30 years ago to play baseball, for a couple of weekends. But that's it. So I don't know the things that have gone on in North Carolina or Thomas is from Mississippi, but what did you go through going to school? Did you go through anything?
Well, there were some tough times and there were some great times. I prefer to look at it from the standpoint that I made a lot of friends there. There were a lot of people there who were my classmates who have ended up being lifelong friends. And that was a great opportunity for all of us to grow in terms of understanding what the climate was back at that time. Of course, there were, unfortunately, some ugly situations that were not pleasant. But overall, it was a great experience. I had a number of people that helped me along the way to be strong, understanding that there was a need to not only get a quality education, but also to just understand who I was and to accomplish all that I could under some challenging circumstances. So there were difficult times, but I prefer to think about it from a standpoint that they were far greater times numerically and happily that brought me through those times.
Go ahead, Thomas.
I just wanted to throw something in here real quick. So, I'm from Mississippi. They integrated very in a hard way down there, I'll say. And even when I was going to school, my brother and I both, we used to, there were very, very few blacks in our school because they were just beginning integration. And even when I was young in elementary school, we used to go in the mornings, the deputies would walk the kids from the bus to the doors because of sometimes there would be protests or people saying something or doing whatever to allow the children to come into the school because there were still people so backwards that they, you know, would protest.
Right.
And, you know, now I just want to say, let's leap forward. Let's look at our children where it's not even a thought, integration, not integration. It's not even, it doesn't even enter into the calculus. My kids have just grown up like with your kids, with everybody else's kids around here. They're just themselves. They like it. You know, we're having an issue now with gay marriage, transsexuals, using bathrooms, this type of stuff and all. But the point I want to make here with the judge, in our lifetimes, we've seen a normalization of law because of clear thinking and enforcement of good law, right? And it changes society. And this is why I think someone like this who has been through these real life experiences and has devoted his life, obviously, you know, he's been decades in just as a judge. He's devoted himself to the citizenry, to our society, to making things better, to, you know, impartial, neutral application of the law. This is very, very important to have this experience here. We were talking earlier about Trump, who had no experience and says inflammatory things at every instance and, you know, can't even locate countries on a map. It's important that this judge is from here, knows everyone, knows our community, and has grown up in it with all of these experiences because he is, you know, as we said before, judges are the most important members of our political system because whether or not, I'm not talking about, you know, you elect somebody, they make a law, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They quietly sit in interpretation of all law all the time. And we've said this before, you know, if you lose judgeships and stuff, you can change the entire texture of our society.
Absolutely.
So it's very important, and I'm excited that we have somebody of this caliber here, that we have somebody that has this life experience and has devoted so many years, because his attitude, you know, his thought process is very, very important, especially given our times right now, where we have a titanic struggle going on in Raleigh, where they want to, seems to want to drag us back to 1860. I don't know what's going on, but it's insane. So I like what I'm hearing, and I would love to hear more from him about his life experience. Like you were just saying, what is he bringing to the bench? Because this is our time. This is our life, and this is my children's world that they're growing up in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and that's one thing that George Thomas says is absolutely correct. Because, and you tell us, Judge, is life experience on the same scale with how the laws are interpreted?
Well, life experience is always important, Michael and Thomas. It's a matter of knowing that we can't change who we are. But what we can do is, as we bring those life experiences, try to understand that we are a society of laws. And in that respect, laws govern our society, gives us discipline, gives us understanding as to everyone understanding what the rules are by which we play this game of life, so to speak. So my life experiences, and thank you, Thomas, for your kind observations of them, they have made me who I am from the standpoint of growing up in a small southeastern North Carolina town, having strong family values in terms of how I was raised, understanding and knowing how to respect all people. Everyone has differences. Everyone has strengths. Everyone has weaknesses. But yet, on the other hand, we all have to understand that we need to respect one another. The law is considered to be fair and equal for all, and certainly that is the way it is supposed to be. And in terms of those areas where judges have discretion as to how to apply the law, in those areas where the law may not be necessarily a bright line, but there is room for a judge to, say, sentence a criminal within a discretionary range or have a sense of imposing a fine in some discretionary range. It's at that point where judges have a chance to utilize their life experiences to determine what he or she considers to be appropriate as an outcome in a case. So what I try to do is understand that although cases have numbers, people are in these cases. And for the vast majority of these folks, this case may well affect how their lives will proceed, not only for that day, but also in the future. That case may be the central point of their entire lives going forward. So I have an understanding for that, having been raised in a modest community where you understand who people are and what people are, and that has galvanized me to understand how I should look at my role as a judge. And thankfully, over the last more than 26 years, I've been elected and reelected because people perceive that in me.
That was the answer I was looking for, because that this is a problem, and what I see is, and I will take for instance what Donald Trump has said, that he's really said some outrageous things about the federal judge Curiel. Now, in the case, you're on the Supreme Court, and there is someone just like that, a North Carolinian Trump, would say something about you the same way. Now, we're all human beings. We're all human beings. I mean, it affects us, even though we are supposed to take a look at the case itself. But how would you deal with something like this if the same thing was going on and you were the federal judge or the Supreme Court judge, and someone that you were hearing it said the same thing about you?
Hopefully, I'll never have that disrespect paid to me. I don't know the federal judge personally, but certainly we all have to respect the fact that no matter what one's position may be of authority, be it a judge, be it senator, be it representative, be it president, be it governor, that at least the office deserves the respect and to accord that kind of respect. There are a number of vehicles that are available to a judge if a judge feels as though he or she or his or her courtroom is being disrespected. So I'm sure that federal judge will handle himself accordingly, but certainly even when one disagrees with a judge, to diminish the judge's capacity as an office holder, appointed or elected, worthy of respect, there is a certain protocol that should be paid to the position.
Well, but wouldn't you think that if this was a major factor that Trump thought that the judge was being completely unfair, that Trump's lawyers would have said something already? The mere fact that they haven't said anything shows that it's worth what he's saying is ridiculous.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Michael. There is certainly, when you're talking about a legal case, you leave it to your lawyers to address the matters. If it's a legal case, then keep it within the realm of the legal case. Let the lawyers do the presentations. Let the lawyers do the press conferences. Let the lawyers utilize their familiarity with the legal process to promote or to defend whatever the legalities may be, to go and talk about the personality or the wherewithal of an individual, not as a judge but as an individual, that has no place, and it's unfortunate. But certainly I do agree with you that one's lawyers ought to be the advocates and the client should let the lawyers do the talking.
I don't want you to say something that you can't say, but what differences have you seen since you've been in the judicial area or in the last 20 years or so that has changed, that has surprised you?
Well, over the course of the last 20 years, there has been a change in the direction of government towards having programs that help people to make the most out of themselves and to stay out of the justice system. And instead, mm-hmm. that has switched to the back end, which is to punish or otherwise deal with individuals on the backside of their situations. You know, there used to be a lot more programming, Michael and Thomas, when it comes to individuals getting job training, getting educational training in terms of a GED or what have you, in terms of getting opportunity and exposure to allow one to be able to find the most in himself or herself so as to be able to get gainful employment, to be able to raise a family, get that education, and go forward and be a meaningful part of society. But conversely, over the course of the last, as you say, 20 years or so, there has been an erosion of those kind of programs because, quite frankly, they have not been funded or have been defunded to such an extent that they are now defunct in terms of allowing people to have those opportunities. And as a result, on the backside, those that have not been able to, for whatever reasons that life has held for them, not being able to get an education, to not get the job training, to be able to have opportunities to find themselves fully, what happens is ultimately on the back end, we have built more prisons. We have more punitive elements involved such that instead of helping folks to be all they can be on the front end, we find ourselves penalizing them for all that they have unfortunately become on the back end. We have become less proactive and more reactive. And that's why we have more folks in the prison system than ever. That's why we have many more families that have found themselves to be fractured, more individuals that don't have what they need to have in order to get the proper jobs. And it just ends up being a domino effect because, indeed, if an individual finds himself or herself in the prison system, then he or she is going to have a less chance of being able to get gainful employment, which means that he or she is going to resort to some other means by which to get the finances necessary to maintain one's ability to function in life. And so we see not only a domino effect but also a cyclical effect that comes largely from the fact that governmental bodies have not done all they can for the citizenry to make sure that folks have an equalized playing field to be able to accomplish what they can in a positive way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Thomas, isn't it breathtaking to hear someone that can talk intelligently about the job that they have?
It is so refreshing. Oh my word! Yes. Well, tell you what, Your Honor, a statement here and a question for you. One, we've spent many a year, the two of us, bashing our heads against the wall and or talking into these microphones on these exact issues because, you know, we're passionate about our country and we lament at times the direction it's going. But when, you know, you just were speaking about an erosion of funding to programs that help and more toward privatization and everything of punishment. It is detrimental. But to move away from all that for a second, because we've talked about this for years, and I think the entire direction is misfortunate. So to back up a second, the other thing that Mike and I do all the time is desperately try to educate voters, to help them help themselves, because despite all the power and money that's behind interest groups and all these politicians that are running around with their lobbyists and all these firms that are trying to get their agenda passed, people still have actual power, and it's called a vote. And everybody, for whatever reason we can't figure out, ignores their own power and ignores their own responsibility, and they don't participate. And one of the things that we see, absolutely, it's just mind-boggling, but we see it on every election cycle, even when we get any of them to show up, which is a miracle, they often won't vote for judges. They'll just vote for the big front runner, whoever, you know, oh, look, it's the president. I'll vote for that person. And then they walk out of the booth, and they leave all the little offices blank. Mm-hmm. And we've said for years, you know, sometimes the school board, county commission, and the judgeships are the most important, most vital offices you could ever vote for, because they're affecting your neighborhood in real time. It's not the way far away imaginary big shining hill of leadership somewhere that's going to make a law that will affect you 10 years down the road. It's today and now. And these people will teach your kids, and these people will sit in judgment of your kids. So is there anything that you can say or offer our viewers to just reinforce that the value of the vote and why they should show up and vote for you, say, or any other judge? But why is this important? Why is it so vital?
And before you answer that, Judge, we have 3 minutes left because this is a shortened show. I got a baseball game to take my grandson for. It's a playoff game today. But I want you back on my show next Friday. So I want to give you an hour.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
And I'll be quick this time around, and we'll do it next time.
Yes, go ahead.
I want you to get to that game. That's important. the vote is the great equalizer. It has no sense of gender, has no sense of salary, no sense of race. It's the great equalizer. We all have one vote, and this vote is extremely important coming up in the early voting cycle as well as on Tuesday, because indeed it's for the highest court. There's one seat that is available, and it's the one for which I'm running.
Yes.
People don't vote for the judges quite often because they don't recognize the judges' names and don't know for whom to vote, so they just don't vote at all. But you were right, Thomas, from the standpoint that those individuals that touch your everyday lives, especially judges, because judges will determine if you keep a driver's license or not, what child support your children will receive, whether or not you have freedom or not. And if you have freedom, if it's going to be full freedom or whether it's going to be limited, and if it's going to be limited, to what extent and when you're going to be able to exercise it. So certainly for all those reasons, one must get out to vote. It's the great equalizer, one person, one vote. Judges are extremely important, and the high court dictates what the precedent is for all of the lower courts to follow, which will impact your everyday lives as well.
And,
so in terms of voting for me, go ahead.
And tell us, who do we vote for June 7th? June 7th and November. Go ahead.
June 7th, vote for me, because I need you to vote for me in this primary on June 7th to get me through to November.
That's right.
I have gone through the ranks, state administrative law judge, district court, superior court, having progressed through the ranks. I'm now ready for the high court because I understand what those lower courts represent and I understand the people that are served by them.
Judge
Morgan. Well, Mr. Morgan, in our limited time left, what is your website and or an email or a phone number where any kind of voter or citizen can get in touch with you and help you out?
www.judgemichaelmorgan.com. Email jmrmorgan@aol.com.
That's it. And probably tomorrow you'll find his information on my website.
Thank you so
Ladies
much.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been great. We're going to talk again next Friday.
Look forward to it.
Okay. All right,
goodbye.
Everybody.
Thank you, Judge.
Great
Take
weekend.
Care.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. That's right. That's right. No.
Okay, then we need to get together. We have some dinner or something. All right? No problem. Very good. Tell everybody to listen. Okay. All right. Yes, please. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I know. Isn't that something? Uh-huh. With my hat.
I'd be famous.
Yeah, you're famous. With the TV off, that room looks a wreck. No, I want you to clean up the room, put the basketball inside your room. Take all the men on the floor, pick them up. Put all your men, pick all your men up.
In the back, that's all they say. We're going to protect, we will protect you seconds of them.
Put that down, pick all your men up off your floor.
They are for sure.
Guy, okay. Yeah. Big strong guy, I love you, but I love you. So look, we've had an incredible period of time.
I can't believe our teacher is doing it.
And it's been an amazing ride. All over the world they're talking about it. It's a movement.
The mail is going to
move.
She said that you're going to cover it up. She said she's going to take it. She's going to take it. That's what she told me. She told her mommy. She said she told her mommy and her grandma. She said that she's going to come and get you and bring you over to the other school.
And then I'll see her.
It's really, I'll tell you what, the press is so biased against us.
See if the door opens to the van. See if there's a this come back and put the stuff in the car.
Show you down the street.